My Mac Podcast number 169. We've got Brian Akaka from Freeverse Software and all the latest happenings in the Mac world. Stay tuned.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
I'm Tim Robertson, the publisher of MyMac.com and one of the hosts here at the MyMac.com podcast, joined today by Guy Searle from Virginia. Hi, Guy.
Hey, Tim.
And David Cohen, all the way from the UK. Hello, David.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Good. We're going to have Freeverse Software on the podcast a little bit later. Actually, we've already done that. So we're recording in reverse order, which kind of messes you up a little bit. But it's kind of nice, just in case the guest that you're going to have on the show doesn't show up, you know, you're not advertising.
You're already covered.
Yeah, you know it's going to be there. So that was a great conversation that we had with Brian Akaka from Freeverse Software. And we were talking off the air after we got done talking to him how much stuff Freeverse really does. It's just amazing that the number of applications and games and the different platforms that they're developing for. It's mind-boggling.
I think actually...
Go ahead, David.
When we first got our Macs here at home, I think my wife must have played through at least half of their puzzle game collection.
Yeah.
Because she's really into those, and you know, all the word games and the card games they do. She really likes all of those. And one of the things she likes about the Mac platform is that there's so many games like that they're not ropey bits of software. They're quality bits of software, and you can try them as a demo and download them and really enjoy them. You know, they're really nice things. You get a lot of value out of those.
Do you think Mac gaming on is coming back? I mean, because for a while there, it seemed like gaming on the Mac was just dead. Nobody was doing it. Nobody was playing Mac games. Now it seems to be going the opposite direction, at least in my opinion. It seems like every time I get a new press release in my email box, and trust me, guys, I get a lot of those, it's about a new Mac game, and it's just amazing how much bigger the Mac gaming market is getting. Do you guys see that?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, it really comes down to, you know, there's a lot more interest in creating Mac games since there's a lot more new Mac users.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously the fact that the Intel Macs make it slightly easier to move games over if they've already been developed for the PC is probably a bonus. Though one thing I do occasionally find frustrating, I mean, it used to be pretty obvious when you picked up a Mac game, you know, you just looked at the processor speed and you would know it would work on your Mac. Now, of course, it's gotten a bit more PC complicated. You have to check whether it's Intel or PowerPC compliant, and then you also need to make sure whether the graphics card in your Mac is capable. You know, the MacBook, for instance, won't play a lot of the current games.
That's pretty much the only one that you... Well, and maybe the Mac Mini as well, but those are the budget machines, if you will. And that's not to take anything away from them. That's not a put down. It's amazing still to me that Apple has a budget machine, two of them. But those are the only, they're really not gaming machines, at least not for the high quality graphics.
No, they're not.
No. I mean, you can still play Burning Monkey Solitaire on it though.
Absolutely.
Gotta love the monkeys.
Let's talk about a little bit what's going on up at MyMac.com before we jump into the news. And we've posted quite a bit since the Macworld Expo has ended a couple weeks ago, and we don't really want to get into the Macworld Expo anymore. Although, actually, before we talk about MyMac.com, let's talk about an email we got from Jeremy North. And he says that he enjoyed last week's show, especially the announcement that David C. will be a regular co-presenter. So there you go, David.
Yeah, he's a British guy, and he obviously likes hearing a bit of British voice on the podcast, so... Yep. What can I say?
And he asked to please move on from Macworld because it kind of left him a little bit disappointed. And I wanted to point out, and I did in my email to him, that the Expo is not just about Apple and whatever Apple announces. And right. I think they probably get a little bit too much credit whether Macworld is successful or not. I don't think the Macworld Expo necessarily lives and dies by Apple. It does to some extent, but... when you're actually at the show, when you actually go to the show, and David attending a Macworld Expo in the U.S. for the first time this year can probably attest to this, there's so much more to the Macworld experience than Apple. And when I say the Macworld experience, I don't mean just the expo, but I mean the Mac, the world of Macintosh. What's all these different developers, software and hardware that's supporting this platform?
Absolutely. I mean, it was great. I was talking via email with somebody the other day. You know, we're trying to negotiate a review of a product, and the thing is, this guy is the lead developer on his products, and he was the guy there sat doing the demo at Macworld. And so you get the opportunity to not only meet a representative of a company, but often, you know, the guys who are actually involved in creating those products. So you can give them direct feedback. You can talk about the sorts of things they've encountered as they've developed their new products. And I think, I mean, obviously our listeners aren't privy to our review list, but I would say we've probably got enough product reviews coming our way for the next 6-7 months, just based on that week in Macworld, and the opportunity to meet directly with the companies and discuss what the new products, some of which aren't out for a couple of months yet, but we get to see them and plan to review them over the coming months. So it really does help drive what we do on the site quite a lot, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the face-to-face contact.
Yeah, and not just for a publication like ours, but for an average Mac user that could attend the show for, say, one day. You know, yeah, you're going to go by the Apple booth and look at the latest gee whiz, wow, that's a great product kind of thing that maybe or maybe you're not going to buy. This year, of course, was the MacBook Air. But really, you're going to probably walk away from the show more impressed with everything else that you see. At least I was.
Oh, yeah.
And that's usually the case year after year.
Yeah.
Up on
I used to go to the New York show all the time with the Washington Apple Pie. They used to sponsor a trip up there. And we basically just had a one-day visit. And I would spend maybe 45 minutes to an hour at the Apple booth, and the rest of the time was just wandering the aisles, you know, with my eyes bugged out.
The latest content up at mymac.com right now. Speaking of the Macworld Expo, we do have a booth video that what is his name? Jim Dicker. He's our new, I guess you could call him our new photographer. He did a lot of videotaping at the Macworld Expo, and we're going to be posting those videos. A lot of people think, oh, Macworld Expo, stop talking about it. We don't want to see any more of it. Yes, you do, because you didn't get to see everything at the Macworld Expo. And like we were just saying, a lot of the stuff that we saw at the Macworld Expo, this is not, you know.
Nothing to do with Apple.
Well, not only that, but it's not just relevant for that week. This is stuff that if you're looking at a new printer 3 months down the line, well, this video that we just posted for the PhotoSmart A26 photo printer, this might be something you're interested in. So we're going to keep rolling these things out as they're edited and ready for publication. They're coming to me from Jim in high def content, so they're a little bit larger files, but that's okay. They're really fun to watch. But speaking of mymac.com, a new writer, Scott Spaziani. I'm horrible with names. Spaziani, yeah. He wrote a really good article called No Superdrive, No Problem. It's about the MacBook Air, of course. And that got some buzz going on the mailing list itself. One of the things that happened was that Owen Rubin said, hey, wait a minute, you guys talking about software that allows you to copy a copy-protected movie. You're not really supposed to talk about those things. And then that's not really true. The Digital Millennium Act, the copyright digital millennium, whatever it's called, doesn't forbid anyone to... It doesn't curtail free speech. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, Owen had a particular perspective based on his working experience. And
well, he's a DRM guy.
Yeah, so you know, I mean that's where he was coming from, but you know, I did find it interesting because, you know, I mean, one of the things that sort of outside the US we hear all the time is that, you know, you're the land of the free, and free speech is your you know, sort of one of your shining precepts. Exactly, and yet. You know, sometimes the activities of some of your corporate lobbyists and corporations and
politicians,
exactly, and particularly these groups are involved in the content creation industry.
Sure,
seem to be doing everything they can to try and stifle that when it comes to dealing with content.
Yeah, well, it's almost like you're allowed to say whatever you want as long as it's what we want to hear.
Well, as long as it doesn't interfere with commerce, it seems. We are the United States of Commerce in paranoia at this point. We're not.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. Who said that? I didn't say that. Some of the other stuff. Go ahead.
I would just remind you that Guy works for the government, so just be careful what you say.
Technically, he does.
We are not paranoid. Why is everyone against me?
If you're a Leopard user, and I know I am, I know David Cohen is. Guy, you've got Leopard at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I would imagine that the people that are listening to this show are pretty tech savvy for the most part. Hey, they found our podcast, and they're listening to it probably on an iPod, maybe in iTunes.
Right.
And
that makes them superior to begin with.
Absolutely. And they probably, most of them, I would say 90% of everyone listening to this podcast is probably upgraded to Leopard at this point. Maybe not. I could be wrong. But I would suggest, or I would put out there that that's probably an accurate figure. That being said, not everybody that just upgraded to Leopard knows about all the new features of the operating system. Russ Walkowicz just did a review of the Mac OS X Leopard, The Missing Manual from David Pogue, gave it a 5 out of 5. So that's going to be a book you definitely want to take a look at. I mean, 5 out of 5, that's basically saying that Russ can't figure out anything that David Pogue left out of this book that should have been in there. So we try not to give out too many 5 out of 5s. I've really kind of reined that in a little bit. There was a few reviewers out there that's 5 out of 5, 5 out of 5. Maybe not 5 out of 5. especially if you have 4 or 5 items in the negative section of the review. Well,
These are the best iPod ear warmers I've ever tried.
Except for this, and this problem. But other than that, it's a 5 out of 5. Well, let's kind of pull back on that a little bit. Donnie Yankelow did a stationary pack for mail review. That looks interesting. I don't use do either one of you use stationary in the new mail application at all? Or do you even use Apple's mail?
I do use Apple Mail. In fact, I've just switched my mail system over to, now that Gmail has IMAP support, to use Apple Mail as the IMAP client for my Gmail accounts, and that works really well. It means you can search through your Gmail using Spotlight, which is nice. But the thing is, I tend not to use the stationery. Me coming from a Windows background, I've been trained not to do that because Outlook's had this for a few years. And if people don't have HTML mail turned on in the Windows world, then they get really annoyed when you send them Outlook stationery mail because it doesn't look right.
No, well, it comes across as attachments.
Exactly. So I'm sort of got myself into the habit of just really not turning anything like that on. So I've not really looked particularly closely at the stationery in mail, but I mean Donnie certainly seemed to think that this was quite a good pack.
111 templates for $30. I mean, and if you're using stationery a lot, that's a pretty good that's a fair price. And they look pretty nice too. I looked at the company's website, and they look pretty nice. I did a review of the Ped 3 iPhone stand. Now, that was something that was sent to me back in November, and I planned on doing a video review of it, but, of course, with the new baby.
Ran out of time.
The new baby and 2 holidays, Christmas and New Year's, and then, of course, jumped right into the Macworld Expo. And the changes that's gone on lately at mymac.com and on this podcast, you know, finding it seems like it's an easy thing to do to stand in front of a camera with a clip-on microphone and talk for 5 minutes and do this little video review and just get it posted. But believe it or not, it takes a lot longer to do a video review by far and a lot more preparation than it does on the podcast because I do my reviews in one sitting. It's from start to finish. There's no editing. You see and hear exactly how I said it. That's not always an easy thing to do, especially when you're by yourself. There's a lot of cursing. A lot of cursing.
Take 14.
But if you have an iPhone, I have to say, and now, granted, I haven't used every single iPhone stand out there, but from the ones that I have used and looked at, I really, really, really dig the Ped 3. It's from thoughtout.biz. You can see my review up at mymac.com. I liked it. It's a good product. Now, we've had Mike from ThoughtOut on the show in the past. And I think they might have been a sponsor either on the website or the podcast years ago. it's been a while, so I consider him not a friend, but he's a friend, and I really wanted to like this product, but it's hard to do a review of a product for a company that you're friendly with like that. Another one for me would be Slick Transitions from G3 Software. I really, really like Bruce at G3, and if his product was horrible, I would hate to review it because, you know, the review has to come first, above and beyond everything else. And if the Slick Transition software was horrible, I would have to say that. You know, I'd send Bruce an apology, say, I'm real sorry about this, but, dude, this software is horrible. Thankfully, Bruce's stuff has always been good. And thankfully, in this case, the Ped 3 is a really fantastic stand. I mean, I really, really dig it. It really shows off the iPhone.
I had the Ped stand they did for the first generation Shuffle.
Yes.
I think I got it from you, Tim. Isn't that one of the things you did when you auctioned stuff off for Hurricane Katrina?
Yes, that was one of the things.
So I think that's where I got it from, and I absolutely loved it. It is quite literally the best stand I've ever had for any product that I've owned, you know, like be an iPod or anything. It really was so well made, so solid, so well thought out, and you mentioned in your review it has that powder coating on the metal that gives it that really nice feel, and I was really upset when I got rid of my first gen Shuffle because I couldn't use the stand anymore.
They're nice stands, they really are.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to invest in one of these next time I'm over in the States.
You know, the thing is, the ThoughtOut.biz is a very small company. If I'm not mistaken, it's just Mike. It's the entire company is him.
Yeah,
well, that would be small.
That's pretty small. I don't think you get any smaller than that. No. That being said, when a company like that releases, and he's a nice guy too, and to me that goes a long way. So when a nice guy is running a small business and he's making such high quality products, I can't wait to tell people about it. You know, whether they pay advertising or it's just a product review or whatever, if it's a great product, I'm going to let people know about it. And the Ped 3 iPhone stand is definitely in that category. Artie just did a review. I don't know if you guys saw that. He didn't give me a title for it, so I called it The Ladybug Cometh. And it's just a little round ball that opens up, and it plays your music that's on your iPod. It's very interesting. And it won the CES Innovations Design Award for engineering.
Yeah.
He liked it, too.
I saw that at the show, and it looked like a nice product. So, I mean, again, it's good that people are coming up with something a little bit different.
Now, see, this is why we have such a large staff that attends the Macworld Expo every year, and this is a prime example because I saw this, too, on the showroom floor, and I completely walked right past, and I thought, ugh, just another iPod speaker system. Ugh. It's, you know, there's so many of them here at the show, I don't even care anymore. And yet, after reading Artie's review and first look at the Ladybug, wow, it looks kind of like a cool product. I kind of wish I would have spent a little bit more time at the expo at their booth and looked at it a little bit. But that's a prime example of why we have so many people covering the show.
Yeah.
With different interests.
With different interests and different perspectives on what they're looking at. Absolutely. You know, for instance, Bakari is big time into photography. And I know those are the kind of booths he was kind of gravitating towards during the expo. So I expect to see from Bakari here in the next couple months a lot of great content about that subject. And it's not a subject that I am particularly interested in personally because, you know, I got a little digital camera and I take pictures and they look good enough for me. But Bakari is taking professional type of, you know, photography at weddings and places like that. So he is really into it. So we're going to get his perspective. And anybody that's interested in it to that extent, they're going to get his perspective up at mymac.com as well. And you just don't find that on a whole lot of sites nowadays, especially that's independent like we are. I mean, when you think about how independent we really are, there's really only one person you have to answer to at mymac.com, and that's me.
Yeah. I'm it.
And, you know, find that on another website that has the size of the staff and the diverse content that we do. I don't think you're going to. I thought I'd toot my own horn there for a minute, guys.
But you do rule with a rod of iron.
I do. And lastly, up at mymac.com, and anybody that's been listening to this show for any length of time knows all about this product. It's the Iterol R09 Portable 24-bit Stereo Handheld Recorder. It's what John's been using for his segments that we haven't had here in a while, but you did hear it some at the Macworld Expo. Anything that we did at the expo for the podcast, it was John. That's what we use to record it with, and it sounds fantastic. It's really amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it looks like a really nice product. I think you need to have quite a commitment to having to have portable audio because of the price.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if that's what you're after, you want something professional quality, then certainly seems to do the job.
And I haven't used it myself other than looking at it briefly at the Macworld Expo. But
right.
I kind of agree with John's assessment that the controls are a little they could be a little bit more intuitive. And so he gives it, for the interface and the controls, a 3 out of 5, but for the recording quality, a 5 out of 5. And I would agree with those, for my limited time with the unit, I would agree with those scores myself. And he gives it an overall 4 out of 5. So if anybody out there is looking at recording portably, this might be what you want to look at. I mean, it's expensive, but sometimes you get what you pay for, right?
That's right.
Oh, very much so.
Over on the blog side, we posted a video from our Apple contest at the ProSoft Engineering booth, and I watched it, but geez, that about put me to sleep. I am so boring on camera. The only part that I liked is when I've got an iPod in my mouth towards the end of it.
I haven't had a chance to look at that yet.
Oh, save your sanity, guy, don't.
Just before I go to sleep.
Just before you go to sleep. And I also put a blog up there that I am on Twitter. So anybody listen to this, if you're a Twitter user, just do a search. Well, just go to twitter.com/mymac. Imagine that. And that's me Twittering. And I do it a couple times a day. So, I mean, if you subscribe to my Twitter feed, you will get my ramblings.
Words of wisdom?
No. I talked about cooking dinner. A big turkey dinner. It was freezing. Schools were closed here yesterday. And what's better on a very cold, miserable day than a great big, huge turkey, potatoes, stuffing, corn, green beans, rolls, everything.
Stop.
I know. I'm getting
tired. I haven't eaten yet.
I'm getting tired and full just thinking about it. One of the things that, and I know, David, you weren't expecting me to talk about this on the podcast proper, but I'm going to, was looking at getting away from talking about the week's news. We've been doing that for a long time, since pretty much we started the show. And it was kind of a crutch. We didn't have a whole lot to talk about sometimes, or we couldn't think about what to talk about, or our time was limited. So, hey, we'll just pull the latest headlines, talk about that, and there's a show. Boom, there you go. And what was your suggestion, David?
Well, I was going to suggest that we try and come up with some specific topics and really do some themed shows where we just talked about one or two specific Mac issues, not necessarily related to that week's news, though occasionally you might get some overlap, particularly if you're talking about, you know, some of the wider issues that Apple deals with on a regular basis, such as the music industry or the video industry. But really to try and get away from just being reactive to the news and just try to do some, you know, take a particular topic and really get our teeth into it, talking to it, you know, dig into it with a little bit more depth.
I'd agree with you 100%. We're going to start doing that starting next week. But
I guess it is my idea. I'm going to have to think of a topic for next week.
That's right. It's going to you're on the spot. That being said, though, if there is something big in the news, we're going to cover it on the podcast, obviously.
Yeah.
And we can't completely ignore what's going on around us. But like I told David, I agreed with him 100%. And we have tried this in the past, and for various reasons, it just didn't work out. But I think we've got. We've got it to the point now where I think that we're not going to have a problem coming up with a show topic every week. That being said, big news this week is Amazon is buying Audible for $300 million.
Wow.
Big money.
As soon as I saw that headline, and full disclosure, I'm actually in talks with Audible once again. It looks like they're going to advertise on the podcast. Nothing is set in stone until I get a check in my hand. Ka-ching. But they have sponsored the show in the past. They did back in May of 2007, and looks like they're probably going to do that again. So it was funny that I'm talking to this guy from Audible, and then this pops up in the news. And the more I think about it, and I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I think this is like a perfect fit. Amazon buying Audible, those are two companies that really do go together well, no?
I'd agree. I think it's interesting that the Amazon, you know, some of the things they've done recently, they obviously before Christmas they launched the Kindle reader, And I think they're making a, you know, they've built a very successful business on the back of book and then, you know, various other types of distribution. And I think what they want to do is they want to be the iTunes of the book space, and audiobooks is part of that, you know.
Do you think the Audible purchase relates directly to the Kindle?
I think it is. I think what they're doing is they're trying to push their core market, which is book selling story selling, if you want to call it that, and they're trying to push out of the niche of just selling physical books into the electronic media. It wouldn't surprise me if ultimately they went beyond audiobooks into podcasts themselves.
Well, they have actually had podcasts, actually. There's been a while there. I think Sean King's, I forget the name of his show, Your Mac Life,
yeah.
Yeah, that's been on Audible for sale for a number of years now. So that's not technically podcasting, but Sean's been doing this for over a decade at this point. Real good guy, by the way, for those who wonder. I've been on his show years ago, so I really like Sean King. So they've been doing that for a while, but we're reading Guy's notes, and you had a question about iTunes and Audible, Guy.
Yeah, you know, I guess the only thing that would concern me is because Apple is essentially a competitor to Amazon, if they buy Audible, would they remove all the Audible content from iTunes?
Well, I don't know. Amazon is still selling Mac products. I mean, one of their hottest year after year for the past 4 years now, one of the hottest selling items, at least on the electronic side of Amazon, has been iPods. So I think that Amazon and Apple have, it looks to me, looking from the outside in, that they have a pretty good relationship. I don't see that iTunes carrying Audible books would necessarily be a concern. What is a concern, well, not necessarily a concern, but a question that I would have is that with Amazon's MP3 store, everything is DRM-free. Does that mean that we're going to get some Amazon Audible books DRM-free? I wonder how that would work. That's obviously between the publishers of the content, the book publishers.
Right.
And at this point, Amazon, whether they want to open it up and say, okay, no DRM. But is DRM for audiobooks kind of in the same space as DRM in music? Do we look at it the same?
I don't think it is. I mean, if you look at, going back to the Kindle again, the books on the Kindle are pretty much DRM'd up, so you can't move them around. So I would suggest that at the moment, probably music is the only space that they would see is gives you the competitive advantage by going DRM-free. I mean, even Apple have talked about, you know, they've got iTunes Plus for DRM-free music, but they've said that when it comes to video, that's a very different conversation.
Yeah.
So,
well, plus the files are so much bigger as well. You know, I mean, it's not that hard if somebody really, really wanted to, and obviously a lot of people do it, to take a song purchased and take off the DRM and make it available online for anybody who wants to download it. But movies and audiobooks, just because of their file size, that's a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's an interesting development for Mac users and iPod users. I think it's only a good thing. The more outlets that we have to get content for our iPods and our iTunes and, you know, the Mac in general, that's better. And the more competition for Apple, that's better as well. Yeah,
absolutely. The only problem I have with audiobooks, I'm a big reader. I love reading, and I would use audiobooks more. But the problem is, I've always got too many podcasts to listen to. So if I buy an audiobook, I'd never get around to listening to it. I've been trying to listen to what's the free one that Scott Sigler did? Earthcore. I've been trying to listen to that for about 6 months, and I'm only halfway through it, just because I only ever get to it when I have nothing else to listen to.
Well, you know, our friend Rick Stringer, who we
got together, I was about to say that, yeah.
At the Macworld Expo, we saw him again. He publishes the Variable Frequencies podcast. That's very e-bookish.
That's a great story.
In that it's a story. It's not a podcast like this. It's creative. It's wonderfully done. It's so good that it could be sold on Audible, I would think, anyways. Oh, look, we just gave Rick an idea. So,
well, I know also he's trying to, I think he's trying to set up a some kind of deal to develop a screenplay for that.
Yeah, let's not get into too many details. It's not made public. We don't know all the details, and that was just a conversation. We'll bleep that out. No, we won't. But, yeah, you know, it's this content that we can get for free right now, and I think that's more of a threat to Amazon and Audible and places like that than anything else. This is great content that doesn't cost a dime, but yet I still want to be able to go and buy an audio book to listen to in the car or on my iPod, wherever, whenever I want. I don't want to have to necessarily read every book. But how do you think this plays in with what Steve Jobs said? Americans or people in general aren't reading anymore. I think that's totally false myself, but
I think maybe tech people aren't reading. Maybe the people in Silicon Valley aren't reading. They're too busy. I know certainly I find it sometimes a struggle to find time to read.
Well, look at how the Harry Potter books have done over the last decade.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, that's kind of hard to argue with that, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, there's big business there. And, you know, I think while the book industry has been slowly declining, it's not in terminal decline.
It's not like the music industry.
No. And you look at, you know, look at places like Borders and you know, places like that, you know, they are pushing outside of the physical books. You know, they've got the titles of the coffee houses, and they're looking at electronic readers and music and that sort of thing as well. But, you know, I mean, I was in an American bookstore while I was over in San Francisco, and it was busy in there.
Yes, it was.
It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like it was empty. And certainly over here in the UK, books are still a very big thing, and, you know, people are reading. So I would hope that, you know, Steve Jobs' predictions aren't, you know, or his view of the market aren't really true. But, you know, you can't expect him to talk authoritatively about everything because, he's not in the book space.
And he also said at one point that nobody wants to watch videos on a tiny screen like an iPod.
Yeah.
So that could be, you know, hey, don't look over here because this is something that we're actually working on. We don't want to talk about that yet.
Might be.
I don't have the Kindle. It seems a little pricey because every single thing that you want on it, you have to buy. It's not like you can rip your own books and put on there. It's not compatible with, if I'm not mistaken, PDFs.
No, it's not. I have the Sony Reader. I picked up the Sony Reader when I was over in the States, and I really love that, actually. It's a fantastic device.
And that works with PDFs, correct?
It can. The problem with both the Sony Reader and the Kindle is that the screen size is fairly small. It's only about 5-6 inches tall. And so if you take a PDF that's been generated for an A4 page over here or an 8.5 by 11 page, you know, a legal pad type page over there in the States, and then you shrink that down to a 6-inch screen, it's not very easy to read it.
No.
And PDF, you know, is not really good at scaling fonts up and down. Particularly if it's something that's been scanned, and that's the flaw with PDF on those sorts of devices. I fired up a PDF on the reader for a colleague at work the other day because he wanted to see how that looked, and it was, you had to basically turn the screen its side and rotate the PDF to be able to read it properly, and so it wasn't terribly convenient. But if you repurpose a PDF. If you take a PDF, like, you know, a Word document, and repurpose it and basically, you know, tell the printing application that it's going to go to a smaller screen, that actually it looks perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not the full flexibility you would get with a laptop screen or anything like that. Right. But I don't think they're really aimed at those sorts of uses. They really are aimed at what it, where the reader really excels is, you know, putting a whole bunch of books on there and just being able to choose the one you want to read and then sitting there and read it. And the screen is amazing. I was sat in a restaurant the other day reading a book on the reader as I was eating, and I noticed the waiter kept on wandering very slowly past my table,
wondering what the heck that thing is. Huh?
Well, exactly. And when I came to pay the check, he asked me what it was, and I showed it to him. And he said, "I couldn't believe it," because he says, "I didn't realize it was, the page was changing. I thought you were looking at this one small page of text for like a
over
whole
and over
meal."
Again.
because he thought it was like a piece of paper. The contrast was that good.
I haven't seen one in person.
Neither have I.
But again, it's the price of entry, that barrier is what gets me.
So high.
When I want to buy, for instance, I'm reading a book. I can't remember the author, but it's called The Suspect, and it's really, really good. I picked it up on the way back from the Macworld Expo this year because the book that I had bought, a Grisham novel, which was boring the crap out of me, but I was going to read it. I just left it on the first flight. So when I was waiting for my flight from San Francisco to Cleveland, that's a fun flight. I didn't have anything to read, so I picked up this novel based on, I don't know what, it just, that looks like a good one. And it's called The Suspect, and so far it's really good. I haven't had the time really to dedicate to hours and hours of reading. Well, I'm about halfway through it right now, and that's pretty slow for me on a book, honestly. I'm a pretty fast reader, not as fast as my wife, but I read books pretty quickly. That being said, I just can't imagine if how can I phrase this? Spending that much money for the Sony e-reader or the Kindle, as compared to simply plucking down $8.99 to $10.99 for a softback
for a book, right?
For a book, yeah. I have a hard time justifying that purchase, and I think a lot of people do.
I can appreciate that. I mean, I paid $300 for the reader, so it's a bit cheaper than the Kindle, but.
You spent $300 for a book cover, really. I mean, I
did, but for me, the advantage is that when I go on vacation, I can take, you know, I will work through, you know, a 2-week vacation, I can work through 8 or 9 books. And if I can take that in one device that has all those books on there, and any time I put it down because I need to deal with family stuff, I know I can pick it up again and it remembers where I was up to. That to me is worth that price of entry. But that's just for me. I don't ever see these devices replacing paper books because the convenience and factor and the fact that they don't need charging, they don't need you know, backlights or anything like that is, you know, vastly outweighs the advantages of having all your stuff electronically on. So I don't ever see those going away.
Well,
but
the biggest drawback for a lot of people and the reason I think it's going to fail, David.
Yep.
No porn. So
this is a device that really lends itself very, very well to a subscription service as compared to audio or video.
But not if I have to spend.
They need to just almost give the thing away.
They really do, because I'm not going to spend $300 and then on top of that spend, you know, $5 a week to get 5 to 10 newspapers and magazines electronically delivered to me.
But those current prices, those are early adopter taxes. I mean, in 3 years' time, the price of these things is going to be, you know, much, much cheaper.
Do you think if Apple got into this and did it, quote, right, do you think it would have any effect on the industry at all?
Oh, I expect so, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if you look. I mean, I've heard some people say that the iPhone, if you've got the right software, is a fantastic ebook reader because of the great screen.
I was going to mention that earlier. The problem there is, and I use my iPhone a lot. It's probably my favorite handheld device of all time, and I've had a lot of handheld devices, and I really, really, really dig the iPhone. It's just fantastic. And I do use it both over Wi-Fi and the Edge network to view websites when I'm at, you know, I'm not around the computer and I've got a little time to kill. Prime example, I'm picking up the 13-year-old from school. The two younger kids are in the back and they're just sitting there waiting and I've got like 5 minutes. I'll pull it out and, you know, check my email and it works great for that and check a couple websites. But, yes, I can read the websites, but it's just not as comfortable as reading it on a computer screen, and I wouldn't want to do it for hours at a time. You know, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and that's about it for a day for me on the iPhone as far as browsing the internet. It's just not an ideal solution for that, I don't think. It's just too small.
Yeah. Well, obviously, as time goes on, the devices develop, we'll see. But it wouldn't surprise me if Apple one day looked to get in that space. But I think Amazon's trying to make the land grab first, and I think the Audible purchase is part of that strategy.
Yep, I think so too.
Oh, no doubt.
So Apple released some software updates. Check your software update to see if it affects you. iLife, iWork, those are a couple of them. A lot of people are asking when 10.5.2 is coming out. 10.5.2 looks like it's going to be a pretty big update to Leopard. And hopefully that's, I don't know, next month or two? What do you guys think?
I think it really could be at almost any time. I think part of the reason why they haven't released it yet is that it's going to be so big as far as the file size go that, you know, they're almost afraid that, that people will stay away from it just because of its size.
You got iTunes surpasses Reels, Real Player and Market Share guy. Which market?
Apparently the streaming media market. The four big ones are Windows Media Player, Reels, Real Player, iTunes, and QuickTime.
Does anybody and between? I don't use iTunes to listen to anything streaming. Do you guys? I mean that.
No, I don't.
For me, if it's streaming, QuickTime usually pops up and plays it for me.
Yeah, same here.
So I don't see that. I saw that news item too, but I thought that's a little misleading because. Exactly which market share did they pass them in? I mean, if you're looking at people use iTunes compared to Real Player, well, iTunes is, you know, they've crushed Real Player years ago because of the popularity of the iPod.
Yeah. And if you want to install iTunes on a Windows PC, then you get QuickTime by default. You can't break them into two.
That's right.
I mean, because QuickTime is there underneath. It's what drives everything within iTunes anyway. So this is a slightly odd. They're obviously counting things a certain way, from, you know, based on however they've tracked this information. But I don't think they've necessarily thought about how the actual. You know, how this thing works in practice.
And there's a lot of content out there that's only in Real Player's format. A lot of big websites have sportscasts and stuff like that you could only listen to it in Real Player. And quite honestly, right. Real Player has been, as far as development, has been dead for a long time as far as I'm concerned. It's still clunky. It still doesn't play as well as I would expect at this time in 2008. It still seems to me like... 1998 software. It's just, I don't think it's that good anymore. And as far as video, Flash and QuickTime has passed it years ago. I mean, Real Player Video is just horrible. Nobody that I know uses Real Player Video. It just looks like crap.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, is there any big software or big new items that we haven't talked about yet? I can't think of too many others.
No, the other things here were more, you know, just if we had time. But, you know, they're not really all that important.
David, sound like you had something.
Yeah, I just wanted to. I mean, we had the thing here about the possible price cut for the iPhone. And, you know, I've been very frustrated with the overall coverage in the press from some of the stuff that came out of Macworld and then from... You know, from the Apple quarterly, quarterly call, and this thing for the iPhone came from there. People have been comparing the sales announcements at Macworld of 4 million units for the iPhone, and then they've been looking at how many iPhones AT&T
activations.
How many iPhones AT&T have activated, and they're saying, oh, there's a disparity here. That must mean that Apple has shipped 4 million iPhones, but most of them are sat in Apple stores and AT&T stores and haven't been sold. And then, you know, they've salted that story with some of the negative press that's come out from here in the UK saying that O2 haven't been as happy, well, they haven't quite met their conservative sales targets for the iPhone. And you know what? I think it's all a load of rubbish. A complete load of rubbish, and it's very frustrating to me that people are trying to spin this thing a certain way.
But isn't it true, though, that any company that gains the success and the popularity of that Apple has,
and the same people are going to want to try to take them down.
The same thing happened with Microsoft when Windows 95 came out. It was such a big thing for Windows users. Everybody was really excited for about a year, and then the mainstream media really started tearing them down. And not to mention governments and the anti-trust and anti-competitive practices of the company.
But that was kind of a different thing, though.
Yeah, but it was still kind of a pile-on effect. Ooh, look, they're doing great. Let's pile on them and beat them down and write all these articles that are slamming them unfounded a lot of times, and that's happening to Apple.
Maybe that's human nature, and maybe that's just the nature of you know, the mainstream media. I don't know. What I object to is the fact that people are putting two and two together, and they're making eight, and then they're saying, well, maybe it's not eight, maybe it's 6.5, and they're spinning it a different way just to put their whole point of view in. For me, the reason that there's a disparity between AT&T activations and iPhone sales is because there's a lot of people aren't activating them on AT&T. They're jailbreaking them and putting them on a different carrier. It doesn't mean they're all sat in a box in a warehouse somewhere not being sold.
Yeah.
You know, that, and that's the thing. And even if they were, even if 15, 20% of that 4 million were sat in warehouses somewhere, yeah, that would still it's be still 3.5 million units in a brand new market that that Apple have never broken into before, sold in 7 months. I mean, yeah. Nokia didn't come out like that. Ericsson didn't come out like that. Sony never came out like that. Samsung or LG or Motorola or anybody else has never sold phones like that.
Well, I would say Motorola probably has. They kind of invented it.
But not that quickly.
I don't know. The Razr, when that first came out, the Razr was extremely popular, and it, too, was like $399 to $599. It was a very expensive cell phone, and everybody wanted it. And remember, this is only 2 years ago.
But at that time, Motorola were well-established in the mobile phone market. They weren't breaking in as a new seller as the market, were they?
No, I would agree with you. You're absolutely correct. So let's wrap up our segment here so we can get over to the Brian Akaka interview from Freeverse Software. I think the listeners are really going to enjoy that. I did want to say, now, G-E-O-F-F, is that Geoff or Jeff?
Jeff.
Okay, that's what I thought too, but somebody else told me, said, oh, no, that's not Jeff, but I think it's Jeff. So I'm going to say Jeff. Jeff Perlman, he's the CEO of Real Software. He's going to be on the show next week. Real Software is one of those companies that I don't follow too closely because I'm not a developer. But I do appreciate what they're doing. I get press releases from Real Software talking about it's 1,000 different applications for the Macintosh that's written using Real Software's development tools. So I'm really looking forward to learning a little bit more about Real Software, sharing that with everybody listening. I hope you guys got some questions prepared for next week. I say we go for the Barbara Walters type of interview, dig up some dirt, and make him cry on the show.
Fair enough.
Bear
in mind what we were just talking about. We should make it perfectly clear that this is Real Software, not Real Media.
That's right. This is Real Software. Yes, absolutely. Real Media is a totally different company. Real Software, I'm looking forward to hearing from Jeff Perlman next week. So yet another CEO of a big company guy.
Great.
We're going to have to get the...
Brilliant.
Hey, David, you got the restraining collar for guy, right?
Yeah, I think we'll certainly have to get him in on time this next week.
Ooh, oh, good luck on that.
A public dig. So let's jump over to the Brian Akaka interview, and we will see everyone a week from today.
Any banana tree will do when I'm pitching woo to you.
And joining us from Freeverse Software is Brian Akaka. Hi, Brian.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing well. Where are you located at?
I'm actually calling from Manhattan.
Manhattan. So it's getting a little late there. You decided to stay and work later just to come on the show, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I was very eager to come on the show and get a chance to talk to you guys.
Well, you know,
thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Freeverse is, of course, one of the greatest all-time Mac platform software makers, not just games but applications. And what I really was surprised about by looking at your website, because obviously this show and most of my interests focus on the Mac and computing technology in general. But you guys are actually doing stuff on the console on the Xbox 360 and Xbox Live now.
Yeah, that's right. We just we released Marathon Durandal for the Xbox 360. I don't know if you guys used to play that.
Oh, yeah, that was an original Mac game.
Yeah, maybe. A little.
Just a little, right? Yeah, same thing with the people in this office. So we thought that it would be a great idea to bring that to the Xbox and share it with a whole new audience. We also are working on porting one of our games, Airburst, over to the Xbox Live.
Oh, that's a fun game.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that should be coming out very soon.
Now, obviously, your start as Freeverse Software was in the Mac gaming community, and you're still super strong there. You guys aren't going anywhere, I take it.
Oh, absolutely not. We're going to continue to be coming out with games. We just released a couple new ones, actually, at the recent Macworld Expo.
What's the new games?
Well, one of them's called Hordes of Orcs.
Now, I looked at that, and it kind of reminded me of Tower Defense.
Yes, absolutely. That was the inspiration.
Yeah, I like Tower Defense, but it's kind of, the graphics are a little bit simplistic for me. I get a little bored with it. What's the difference between Hordes and Orcs? And you got to watch how you say Hordes and Orcs, by the way. And Tower Defense.
Well, it's the same premise. You have your enemies coming at you onto the screen from the left, and they're trying to get to the portal on the right, and so you build towers to prevent them. What sets our game apart is it's orcs, obviously, and it's set in a medieval environment. So you have spells, you have radiation towers and arrow towers and fire towers, things of that nature. What's really cool, though, is it's fully 3D. So you can zoom in and zoom out, change the angle, and take a good look at them.
So in other words, you took the concept and just made a much better game out of it.
That's what we're hearing from people that have played it, is people are really getting addicted to it, and they're loving it, so we're real excited about it. We've also added a whole bunch of new game modes, too. So
really?
We're really trying to expand the gameplay again.
I have no idea what that was. Who was that? Was that you, Guy?
Yeah, it was me. I sneezed.
Ah, okay. Now, Guy, you used to, back in 2004, when you first joined MyMac.com, one of the first things that you wrote about was Wingnuts.
Oh, yeah. Love the Wingnuts. And as a matter of fact, I remember they had just put out a press release talking about Wingnuts 2 that took a little bit longer than I think they had originally planned.
Yep, that's true. I think that Wingnuts 2 was actually about 3 years in development.
Hey, all good things to those who wait, right?
Sure, sure.
Now, I got to tell you, Brian, one of the programs, about the only program I really got excited about after walking the showroom floor at the Macworld Expo this year, was Periscope. I mean, it really was a program that I had been looking for a long time. And it basically turns your Mac and its cameras into a security system, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Who came up with this idea? And tell us a little bit about it.
Well, this was a software program that we developed in-house. And basically what it does is it expands the functions of your existing eyesight, or if you have an external webcam hooked up to your Mac, it just adds a whole bunch of functionality to it. The primary function is to use it as a security camera. So you can put it on, activate it, and walk away, and it will detect any kind of motion that it sees and snaps a picture.
But it's not just on the computer, right? It will actually upload it to an FTP site, to your .Mac account, all kinds of ways you can get that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It will share it to your email. It'll send it to your .Mac web page if you have that set up. And, yeah, it's great for getting these photos out to you wherever you are.
I love it.
Especially if you have an iPhone. It'll send it to you, you know, in your pocket.
I thought this would be a really good idea to use in a daycare system where people want to check on their kids. They could set a little laptop up if they wanted to go to that expense and have it send pictures all the time if you wanted.
Sure. Keep an eye on your kids.
Absolutely. You know, Freeverse, and I didn't know this until I read it on your website, you guys have won more Apple Design Awards than any other company.
Yep, we're pretty proud of that, actually.
Yeah, why is that, you think?
Well, I don't know. I guess all the bribes we've been giving Apple.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that helps.
Like cash all always helps. Right?
Yeah, I think that we do have a very similar vision of the type of products that we want to put out, as Apple does. And so I think that those similarities as far as creative interfaces, seamless integration of multiple different functionalities, such as using your eyesight or using your mouse and your .Mac account, things like that, and just making it all into one very easy-to-use but powerful package. I think that's one thing that we really have in common with Apple's vision of what software and products should be.
No. Are all your software applications and games developed in-house, Brian?
Not all of them. A lot of them are, but we also act as a publishing house, so we'll contact people.
Like Marathon.
Right, like Marathon, like Hordes of Orcs. That was developed out of our office, and then we took a look at it, saw that we liked it, and then we worked closely with the programmer to put our own little finishing touches on it.
Now, is there any chance that that the new version of Marathon will be coming to the Mac as well?
You know, people were approaching us about that at the recent Macworld Expo.
It's not really a new version, though, is it? It's more like a port to the Xbox Live.
Well, right. It is a port, but the problem is I don't believe that there was a OS X-friendly version of Marathon ever released.
That's correct. There has not been. Unfortunately, we don't have the rights to do that for the Mac, but we have been hearing from people and saying that they would like it. So who knows?
I know I would.
You know, Brian, there's...
Never say never.
There's a ton of older Mac games that have never been ported, that some of them have been abandoned at this point, that really would work well in the current landscape. I mean, the Macintosh is obviously gaining in popularity. People want to use it for more than word processing in the iLife suite and web browsing. Any chance that Freeverse will go look at some of these older games and see if they can acquire the rights to republish them?
Sure. We're always open to looking for games that our customers would really enjoy. But at the same time, we don't want to keep on rehashing older titles. You know, we have so many great ideas for new games that we'd really like to get them out there at the same time. So it's just a matter of resources and our programmers' time is the real limiting function. If we could, we would be putting out a game a week.
That's what interns are for, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Get those interns busy.
We just need an army of them.
One thing that comes across from your website, Brian, is really, you know, you've got quite a diverse set of products here. You know, I mean, even just looking at the games, you've got strategy games, you've got card games, you've got, puzzle games, and then you've got arcade shooting type games. I mean, what sort of creative process is involved in bringing a new game to Freeverse and deciding that it's something you actually turn into a live product? Is that very... collaborative process with everybody within the company, or does somebody, you know, put the hand up and say, well, I've got this idea, and they'll knock up a demo and then sort of everyone builds on it from there? How does that work?
Sure. Well, yeah, it's not a very formal process at all, I must tell you. A game will catch someone's eye, and we'll kind of pass it around the office, we'll test it, meaning that we'll play it a lot, and... Yeah, just based on how much fun we have playing it, it's basically what goes into deciding if we really think it's for us.
Now, like one thing, go ahead, David.
Sorry, I was going to say one thing that really brings over the fun element of what you do is your Sim Stapler products.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real sort of tongue in cheek idea you've got there up there on the website. I really like it.
Oh, excellent.
Now, I got a question
for you. Well, plus the fact that it's called Sim Stapler Arena.
Right, that's the latest revision. That's our multiplayer version of Sim Stapler.
Now, besides games, and of course we talked about Periscope already, it really seems like Freeverse, in some respects, it seems like you guys looked at what Macromedia was doing really well and has been abandoned at this point by Adobe. And you've got two programs that I really, really like. Sound Studio is one of them. It kind of took the place of Sound Edit 16, which, by the way, was my personal favorite sound editing application back in OS 7 and 8 days.
Sure.
And Lineform is really more of a freehand type of application, more so than Adobe Illustrator is. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, going to Sound Studio, we've worked with the developer. It's the same developer, Lucius Kwok, who put out the original Sound Studio 1 and 2, and so we've been working with them to publish Sound Studio 3, and we've been getting a lot of feedback from customers saying that they love the interface of Sound Studio 3. It's very intuitive. There's only a few buttons on your main window at any given time, but within that you have a lot of flexibility and power as far as how you want to manipulate your sound files. You'll see it in the waveform, and you can cut and paste and do all kinds of transformations on it. And it's kind of the same idea with Lineform, too. We wanted to have a very stripped-down, simplified interface, so you're not overwhelmed with a million options as soon as you open the software. But yet, if you dig a little deeper, you'll see that you have pretty much any tool that you would ever ask for.
Yeah, Line... Lineform is one of those applications that I've been meaning to check out myself because I use Illustrator all the time. I used to use Freehand quite a bit. So
okay.
Lineform is one of those applications I think is right up my alley, and I think a lot of Mac designers, which coincidentally is a lot of people that listen to the show, imagine that, they'd probably be interested in it too. It looks like it's a very flexible but yet very powerful application, yes?
Absolutely, absolutely. The great thing about Lineform too is it won't kill your budget. It's only $79.95, and it's very lightweight. It'll open in under a second. So one bounce of the dock, and boom, you have a blank window there. You can start drawing right away.
What's Pulp Motion?
Pulp Motion is the newest creativity software that we've put out, and it's basically for creating your own home slideshows, basically. So you can take a bunch of photos that you have, some home videos, you can put it to music, and
it looks like a lot of fun.
It is, absolutely. And again, it's one of those programs that you can take your existing your digital memories, basically, and just very easily create a very polished product with it.
It kind of reminds me of A Comic Life, but for the iMovie crowd.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it.
Who designs your icons? You guys have some of the best icons for applications.
I was just going to say that. I absolutely love the look of your icons. They're fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. That would be our creative director, Steven Zay.
I mean, you would think that's a simple thing, but so many companies get it wrong. You know, they have icons, but they're just really not eye-catching. The ones from Freeverse, man, you see them and they just pop right out at you. They really do.
That's great to hear.
I do have a Barbara Walters type of question, and I hate to put you on the spot like this, Brian, but
uh-oh.
I have to ask, does Freeverse hate monkeys?
Click, click, click. You think it's funny to click on monkey? It no funny to click on monkey.
No, actually, monkeys are our friends. We just set them on fire because, you know, it's just something that we do. We can't really help ourselves.
One of the first games that I really got into on the Macintosh was Burning Monkey Solitaire. And it was such juvenile humor, and it really spoke to me. I loved it. You click the one monkey, and he'd get up and ask, where's my juju beans? Who's seen my juju beans? I loved it. Was it juju beans? I forget now. I think it was juju beans.
Right, I believe so.
Bees or beans? I don't
beans.
Remember.
Juju beans.
That's what I thought.
Where are my jujubes? I can't seem to find my jujubes.
Hey, Monty, if you're not going to eat those jujubes.
Who came up with that? Do you know? That was probably a little bit before you joined Freeverse, correct?
Right, yeah, that's one of our older products. I'm actually not sure the history of Burning Monkey Solitaire, but
it was hilarious. It used to come pre-installed on a lot of like Mac Performas and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was on every machine. If you got a Performa, there it was. And unfortunately, it wasn't the full version, and it was one of the first software programs, shareware, that I bought because it was just so much fun, and I think it was like $10, something like that. It wasn't very expensive.
Right.
But it was just so much fun. And to me, I used to show people that compared to the Windows version of Solitaire. I say,
oh,
look at
God.
The difference. And it's, you know, it was funny. It was comical. And yet it was still, it wasn't easy to
challenging.
Beat. Yeah, it was challenging. Plus, it had a really nice cheat feature in it, which I personally enjoyed a lot.
Oh, absolutely. It's no fun to play a game if you can't win, no matter what you have to do.
That's right. You guys participated at the Macworld Expo. In fact, you guys had a pretty large booth there. What do you guys get out of going to the Macworld Expo? I mean, all your business at this point, I would imagine, is done online. Why spend so much money on a booth at the Macworld Expo? And it looked like your entire crew was there. I mean, there was a lot of people there at the Expo for Freeverse Software.
Sure. Well, we go there. We want to be part of the community, and we feel like it's a great way to have our presence be known. You know, we want to be out there and meeting people, meeting our customers, meeting people who've never met us before. And to be able to show them our products face-to-face is something that you really don't get just from visiting our website.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, I would probably never refer to Periscope if it wasn't for the Macworld Expo. And it's, like I said, it's an application that I was pretty excited to find on the showroom floor. In fact, I talked about it on another podcast, the MacCast. when Adam Christensen asked me what application I was looking at that I was really excited about. Yeah, and Periscope was right at the top of my list. It's just one of those applications that when you see, you're like, hey, that's handy.
Very cool.
Before we wrap it up, I did want to ask, over on the, what's that the podcast guy? Leo Laporte, not Twit, the other one. MacBreak Weekly.
Yeah.
They've been talking about the Mac heist. 2 weeks ago they had somebody on that said Mac heist is not a good idea for developers. And then last week, technically this week, they had somebody from Mac heist on defending it, basically saying that it's all about promotion for the companies. Now, you guys participated in the Mac heist. How does that work for you guys? Is it, do you look at it as more promotion, or and do you see it as a real positive thing for you?
Sure. Yeah, we participated. We included Wingnuts 2 and our mini golf game, Tiki Magic. And we were actually very happy with our participation. We got our games in the hands of something like 45,000 Mac customers, so
That was awesome. Great.
Yeah, absolutely. And we made a little bit of money off of it, and so that was nice too. But basically, it was just great to be able to get our products in front of that many people.
So you'd be interested if another company approached you on something similar?
Sure. Okay. We're always looking forward to spreading the good word about Freeverse products.
Okay, David, quick, write that down. We've got to come up with a Mac heist thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
My Mac heist.
Speaking of new products, something I saw at your booth at Macworld that really blew me away was Neon Tango.
Yes, Neon Tango. We're very excited about this game.
What is it, Guy?
Neon Tango has got almost, if you remember the old arcade game, oh, wow. Darn it.
Asteroids.
Now I can't remember the name of it. Not so much Asteroids. It was very, very colorful, side-scroller, picking up Defender. Yeah,
Defender,
kind of the look that it had, except it was it's a top-scroller. And, I mean, once I started playing it, I just couldn't walk away from it. And finally I had to, because I think I had to meet you, Tim. But it was really difficult to break away from it. I was having so much fun with it. When is that going to be released?
We're planning on a release date of that for February 5th. So that's not too long.
Very soon.
Next week.
Yeah, not too
cool.
Long away.
Cool. Excellent. Well, Brian,
we to call it Asteroids on Acid.
Guy?
Yeah. That almost makes up for Jared.
Oh, come on. Everybody loves Jared.
Okay, Guy or David, Guy and David, I've blown through all my questions that I prepared. You guys got anything?
Not for me.
Nope.
Nothing, huh?
I monopolize all the time.
I wanted to bring up Neon Tango, because, I mean, that really just looks great.
Any parting shots?
I just wanted to thank you guys for having us on the show, and keep on lookout for Neon Tango, which is coming out soon, and please check out Lineform, which is a great alternative to Adobe Illustrator.
Freeverse software has been publishing on the Mac since before most of the people listening to this show was even using a Mac. They're still going strong. In fact, it looks like they're going stronger than ever. They're a major force in software development on the Macintosh. They also have PC stuff out there, so if anybody's listening to this show is a PC user, check that out. And if you're an Xbox 360 Live user like I am, check out their stuff up on Xbox 360 as well. Thanks for coming on today, Brian.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.